Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Karate Podcast. I'm super excited today to have with me Carla Burkett, one of the UK's top fighters. She is a multiple English and British champion. She's a Commonwealth champion. She's been a European silver and bronze medalist, a Premier League and Series A finalist, a top-ranked GB athlete at the Olympic qualification tournament last year, and also held a ranking of top 12 in the world in the WKF. Just incredible, incredible accolades and achievements. And it's a real pleasure to have Carla with us today. So Carla, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So if we could just start just briefly, what brought you into karate, and when did you get started?
I guess I kind of fell into karate. My best friend did it when I was younger. So we was actually at my sister's birthday party. So I was like 5 years old, and my best friend was leaving the party early to go to karate. And I begged my parents to go with her. And that was kind of where it started, to be honest. She gave me her old tracksuit bottoms and t-shirt to bung on as I was in the party dress. And then, yeah, I literally didn't miss a week from that moment. So, yeah, that was the first club I joined. It was literally where I did most of my karate career at that club. Right through to only the last couple of years. So, yeah, just kind of fell into it.
Was it a club that was geared around all aspects of karate, or was it a club that, was just focused on the sports side of karate?
No, it was a traditional club. So we did do, obviously, all of our basics, all of our katas, and we did have... all aspects, to be honest. There was something for everyone at the club. It was a very family orientated club. Older people, parents were part of that club, but yeah. our coach was a world champion. So it was a case of, if you wanted to go down that route and that was where you were headed, we was very, very exposed to Kumite and fighting early on, exposed to competitions from an early, like I did my first competition at Orange Belt, I think. So if that's what you wanted to do, then we were definitely pushed to do that and encouraged to do that. But that was only a small percentage of our club that did do that. The most people, they were just, average people who just wanted to turn up to karate and train and didn't really have them ambitions. So, I guess there was a bit something for everyone.
And so what were the sort of main events or experiences that led you particularly into the Kumite aspect of karate and then on to competition?
Funny enough, when I was younger and I did a couple of my first competitions and I did Kumite. I remember one of my first experiences, I got punched in the throat. Yeah. And at that point, I said, no, I'm finished. I'm going to do kata. So I did kata only for a couple of years, which if people knew me like now, they would think could never imagine me doing kata because I don't ever do it now, really. But I was completely turned off from Kumite and I was a bit scared of it, I guess. And then in the club, we just always did sparring. And I just, as I got a bit older and a bit more experience in the sparring, then I went back into competition and did Kumite. And I think part of me kind of flipped that into being a little bit too aggressive sometimes, and it switched me the other way. We was exposed to competitions from very, very early. And I just loved competing. I that's always been a part of me. I love competing. I love trying to be the best at whatever I'm doing. So yeah, and we always knew that our coach was a world champion, and it was always something that seemed so far away for us when we were younger. Like being a part of the England team or representing England was like a million miles away. Yeah. So when I started to turn of age where I could start selecting, it was a bit, it just didn't feel quite real. I remember thinking to myself, I just can't believe that I could potentially represent England. It was like a massive thing for me at that point.
Absolutely. And quite interesting the fact that you managed to overcome that experience of being punched, because I know, you know, from running my own club, that one of the things that puts people off Kumite is that, you know, that first shock of being hit. And then, so I guess the fear factor that then built around it. Anything that was it just literally turning up to training and getting in sparring situations that helped you overcome that, or was there anything you did in particular to?
I was so young at the time. I don't think that I would be lying if I said I looked back and I did, you know, put all these strategies in place and I had this psychology, you know, psychological approach to it. I definitely didn't. I think it was just, I mean, I guess just being coming up a little bit older, my people around me, we always sparred in the club. It wasn't really an option not to. So I just got better, I think. I think that's literally what it was. I got better. I got a little bit more confident and probably a bit more exposed to being hit. And it wasn't so scary anymore, I guess.
I think the increase in physical skills can often
result in
mental confidence gain as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you've got a world champion at your club who's coaching, I guess there's a level of confidence you can simply draw from, you know, that, knowing the knowledge that's been presented is valid.
So, yeah.
You didn't just do competition, you became one of our most elite fighters. Was there a point where, again, you made a decision around that, or is it just something that kind of happened for you?
I think it was just something that happened for me. I don't think that I was never the most naturally skilled, I don't think. I didn't get selected for my first 2 years that I tried to select for England. So I didn't get selected until I was an under 21. So I was 19, my first competition representing England, which is quite old now. When you look back at some, when you look now, you've got people competing for the country at 14 years of age. Yeah. And I think in one way that was a bit of a blessing for me, because competing for England wasn't the be all and end all. I just enjoyed karate. I enjoyed getting better. I enjoyed competing. And for me, a lot of it was just being the best I could be, rather than, obviously everybody wants to be the best in the world, and that is, if somebody asks an athlete what do you want to do and what do you want to be, the best in the world is obviously the easy answer to have. But how many people reach that? So how many people leave the sport being disappointed because they've not reached that? Whereas for me, it was always about being the best I could be. And we were all, you know, there's so many circumstances that have to fall into place for you to be the best in the world. For me, it was just a case of with what I've been given, the circumstances I have, what's at my disposal, make use of that and be the best I can be.
Yeah, fantastic. So I think there's a great lesson there for particularly younger listeners that where you're focused on what you can achieve as opposed to that external validation.
Yeah.
I think nowadays, I see a lot of younger people feeling pressure for that external validation, particularly in social media, things like that.
Yeah, massive.
Lessons to learn in karate.
Yeah. And I think as well, it's finding your why as to why you're doing something. And ultimately, when you're a kid, the reason why you do something is because it's fun.
Yes,
that's literally all it comes down to. You enjoy it; it's fun. And as a child, you don't want to do anything that's boring or that you don't enjoy. You always want to back away from that. And I think I've definitely tried. Although there has been obviously times where I've not enjoyed karate, and And being at an elite level, there are often a lot of times like that because of external pressures. But you have to find why you're doing it. And are you doing it for your own self and your own personal goals and the intrinsic motivation, or are you doing it for the validation of other people, for people to give you the accolade that you feel you deserve? And for me, it's never been about that. It's just always been about me. I've never needed anybody to give me any unnecessary, like any accolade, or never needed that external kind of influence.
So as a fighter going toward any competition, was part of your preparation ensuring that you put the focus on like your enjoyment as opposed to the outcome? But I presume as you're a competitive person, there was always that desire to achieve at the same time.
Yeah. I hate losing.
Yeah. So what sort do you hate losing more than you want to win, do you think? Or
good question.
Yeah.
Good question.
I think so many people get that pre-competition nerve. Sometimes it empowers people, sometimes it debilitates them. But given your experience of what makes you tick, essentially, building up to the competition and then on the day, that would be really valuable, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on... It's really weird because actually, like, sometimes the big events and the big... When I've performed my best and when I do win, the aftermath of that, of, you know, the attention and the, I'm quite an introverted person generally. So that is never been what I wanted to do it for. I enjoy winning for me. But I feel like if I lose and I've done the best I can do and I've achieved certain goals within my competition or my fights, then I can walk away happy. Mm-hmm. But if I lose because I've messed up, and I think that's one of my biggest things, is I hate messing up, or I hate letting people down as well. Although I am doing it for me, that is a big kind of, I feel like I let myself down if I lose when I shouldn't have really lost. But a lot of my motivation definitely does come from the intrinsic. And if I look back at some of my best performances, it's always been when I've just enjoyed it. And I've not done it for anybody. I've not really had any expectation. I've just completely enjoyed every point I've scored. You know, I've been excited to step on the line. I've been completely in the moment. Whereas when I do think about the outcome too much, then it does put pressure and it does make you tense up and make you really tight and scared to make them mistakes. And when I'm enjoying it, I'm not so scared to make them errors and then mistakes, because it's just, you're in the moment.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Were you an athlete that would write down goals prior to competition, or do you just have a general kind of...
I did used to keep a training diary, or I did used to have things that I had my own personal goals or things I wanted to work on, but they were generally quite quite performance driven rather than outcome driven. They were always about being like improving a skill or improving how I felt, more than it was about what I gained from that as an outcome.
Then to put your goal focus around processes you could control.
Yeah.
And outcomes or performance quotes, perhaps, you know, are influenced by others.
Yeah. And when I look back, and there are times when I've completely messed up at a tournament or I've really underperformed, it has been because I haven't been focused on the process. I haven't been focused on the things that I value. It's been because I've let the external factors kind of creep in. So I definitely work better process driven, for sure.
Excellent. Who've been your biggest influences in your karate development and career?
My dad. In terms of, I couldn't have done any of it without my dad. He literally was the person who took me to every karate session.
Okay.
Yeah, took me to every karate session. He took me to every competition. So he was probably the biggest influence for me. Then my coach, because my whole karate career, he's just been in my corner and supported me massively. So for me, they're the two biggest influences. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. So what are the things I'm interested also is you've competed at, you know, all levels of competition.
Yeah.
From regional and national through various stages of international competition. What is that like? And is there a difference in, I guess, how you feel about that and how you might have changed the way you trained in regard to each level as you approached it? So you've done a Premier One, you've done the Olympic qualifiers.
Yeah.
You've done it all, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't necessarily look back and say I have any regrets or that I would do anything massively differently. There are things that I would want to know if I was to start my journey again. Obviously looking back in hindsight and knowing what I know now, coming out the other side of it. And it's very lonely the more elite you get. Like in terms of the pressure, your circle gets smaller, your training group is smaller. Like there's so many things that when you're elite takes the enjoyment out of it. And I would definitely say to my younger self to, I guess, not be so just be aware of that. And expect to be expecting of that, because I feel like I wasn't ready for that at all. So a lot of it did hit me like a bit of a slap in the face when things started to get like that, and it can become quite toxic. So I think that I definitely was not ready for that.
Right. And is that toxic in that people are trying to essentially achieve where you replace kind of where you're not, or there's like a hunger for that one space or that top spot? Is that where it comes from? Or
I wouldn't even say it's that, because actually with regards to like that type of situation, I think that's quite healthy. Obviously everybody ultimately is there for the same reason. And having competition for one spot like that is actually what it's all about. So I don't think that it's from that side at all. And we all have to remember that although we are a combat sport and we do punch and kick each other in the face all the time, when you come off, we are all just trying to do the same thing. So you can't take it personally. And if you did take that personally, then you wouldn't get very far and you would really struggle. I think it's more from the case of when you get to a certain level, there is a lot more opinions, I guess. On maybe what direction you should be going, how you should be doing your training. You need to know who to listen to, who to trust. And the better you get it's just who you can trust and who you listen to, and be confident in yourself and confident in your team and confident in those around you, that what you're doing, you're on the right track.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard not to be easily influenced. So yeah, I guess that's one of the big things that is quite tough. Yeah. I found quite tough anyway for me.
It's interesting. So a slight different tact. I also do jiu-jitsu, and one of the things I've seen in jiu-jitsu is that you can be technically dominant in like the competition side of things. So you don't necessarily be the fastest, the fittest or whatever. Like if your technique is on point, you can overcome.
Yeah.
I'm wondering in your own experience, because karate is a much faster sport, it's very ballistic. Mm-hmm. Is reaching that higher level, is it a combination of tactics and physical attributes, or does physical attributes dominate how far you can go in that particular sport?
Interesting one. I think the higher you get, the tactics are probably one of the biggest components, which will where two people can be the same, or maybe somebody can even be better in the physical attributes, but somebody else can win because their tactics are better. You know, they can read the opponent better, they can play the game better, because ultimately we are in a fight, but it's a game. You know, there are scores, that it's how you, there are rules that you have to play by, and who can manipulate them rules or play by them rules better than the other.
Yes.
So for me, I think and also I guess the higher you get, you have to have an understanding of not only the tactics that you're implementing, but the tactics that your opponent is trying to put onto you.
Yeah.
If you can't understand that and read when somebody is setting you up, then yeah, it's difficult to come through that.
Yeah, and is that something that you would have to readily do on the mat without guidance? Because I presume at the high level, your coach isn't yelling across the tatami at you saying, do this, do that.
No, I mean, often you can... when you're at the when you're at top level, you obviously know a lot of your opponents, you see them around a lot, you can get a gauge of who you're fighting, and you probably would have spoken about it with your coach before you step on the line. There are of course surprises, and that this is the beauty of kumite. I mean, it's, you never know what's going to happen, so there are of course things that will happen in the match which you do have to overcome and work out yourself. And it is different, you know, having a game plan is all well and good on paper. And you could before you step on the match, you could think, right, when they do this, I'm going to do this, or I'm going, you know, but you can't then the physical attributes do come into play, because you might know that they're going to do a certain technique, but you haven't really, you've never felt that come at you before. You don't know how fast they're coming at you. You know, there's just so many things that come into play that the plan that you probably implemented with your coach may not work. And you have to figure it out in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And well, a lot sooner than that, because the match is over in 3 minutes. You have to figure that out probably within 30 seconds of the match starting. Is, you know, you have to change it around. You can't do the same thing.
Did you ever watch, video of other competitors that you may come into contact with? Is that something?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that also one of the big things is, often watch videos of some of the top competitors, not because you're idolizing them, but because if you can combat some of the strategies that they're putting into place, you tick off, you know, 90% of the competitors. And look at strategies more than that person. You know, you're not training for this person, you're training to overcome that strategy.
Right.
And then there will be so many people that may have that same strategy, or, you know, do certain things, be a defensive fighter, for example, and how they implement that. If you can look at that rather than the person, otherwise you'll be there all day analysing, you know, 100 people, when actually they may all only use 5 strategies.
Yes.
So it's about that more than the person.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've obviously competed at Series A, Premier League, which is amazing. And then you went to the Olympic qualifier tournament in Paris. And what did it mean, and does it mean to you, that you did come that, you know, fifth place for you as, in terms of your karate and your ability?
Mixed really. I mean, I guess I always knew that was probably going to be, if I didn't qualify for the Olympics, that was probably going to be my last tournament, so I had that in the back of my mind anyway. I wanted to go out and give it everything I had. The lead up to it was very challenging. Obviously we had COVID, which was a big, you know, put a stop on so many of our preparations. We wasn't able to train for so long. Even right up until the tournament, we just wasn't able to train. I had to go on a training camp in Portugal to get bodies and get partners, and that was only for a week. So in terms of my preparation for that tournament, I would say it's probably one of the worst I've ever had. But again, this is where I think experience and stuff comes into play, because I can't think about, and this is how I thought about it on the day, I couldn't think about, you know, that I hadn't had, you know, the months and months of training and preparation for the tournament. I had to think of the years of experience I've gained for this tournament, and try and change my thought process on that. Because if I was, you know, getting hung up on what I hadn't done prior, then it was only going to lead me to just fail. But I was probably in one of my worst physical conditions I've ever been for that tournament.
And how was your mindset on the day? Was it just excitement that you got that far?
No, I was so disappointed, because I think I got to the point where you can taste it. I think I got to that point where I thought, you know what, if I win, like, I got to the point where if I won that fight, then I was in the top four and then I was in the round robin. And at that point, I would have bet on myself. I mean, there was one person of four not going to the Olympics. And at that point, knowing how I think and my mindset, there was nothing that was going to stop me once I got to that moment. So I just cried and cried, because I just, like, I got to the point where I could smell it. So I was very more disappointed than happy in how I did.
Yeah, and looking back, is that any different now? Like, can you look back and see what you achieved to get that far?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I guess as females, we had hardly any preparation leading up to that event. We had no funding, really. So we did have to do so much off our own back in the whole lead up to it. It was a very different experience to some of the other athletes on the team. So when I weigh everything up, I'm proud of myself to where I came, and some of the competitors that I fought on that day were, my first round was a girl from Croatia who I'd never beaten before. The last time before, she took me out 8-0, 8-0. So when I see the draw and that's my first round, that in itself was a big challenge to be faced with on the first round.
How do you deal with that?
So my coach on the day was a coach that is not necessarily a coach that I work with. It wasn't a coach who I train with. So there was a few things that I looked back on when I fought her the last time that I got caught out on. And it was just kind of giving him some cues of, because the time I fought her before, I went up in points and she hit me with certain techniques straight off, because I just wasn't ready, and I wasn't ready for her and what she comes back at you with. So I guess I give my coach at that time some cues, so that if this happens, if I'm up in points, you know, say this, because I need to switch on and I need to be aware of this. And sometimes you just need them one or two words to just kick you back into getting the right mindset. But yeah, it was a tough one. But actually, I think that without that being my first round, who knows if I would have got to where I got to, because I needed to be on it from the very first Hajime. I couldn't have a first round to ease into it.
Yeah,
it was a tough one from the get-go.
Yeah, incredible. Such a feat of achievement, really is. So you did mention that obviously you're a self-funded athlete. Is that the main challenge that you faced as someone who's competing at the elite level, that you have to fund everything, or the other challenges that you faced in your career that stand out?
I think the funding is definitely a big one. Obviously, I've always worked throughout my career, so I've always had a professional career alongside karate. But I don't think I would change that, because karate is a small part of your life. And yeah. I've never wanted it to define me or for it to be everything that I do. I've always wanted to have a career, and I've known that from a young age. But I guess, yeah, I mean, there's been so many different feats along the way, injuries. I have massive, massive problems with injuries. My hips are shot and have been for years and years. So I've needed needed operation on them for a long time. So that's a big one. But yeah, obviously, there's been personal things that you have to overcome, of course, like anybody. But there's a lot. And I think you can also get quite hung up on the things you have to overcome, and, you know, this big story of, you know, defeating the odds and all of that. But I've never really considered things you have to overcome, I guess.
That relates back to your focus on enjoyment over...
Yeah, I guess so. And yeah, I mean, like one of the examples of one of the things, I mean, my dad got diagnosed with cancer when a few years ago, and he was diagnosed terminal just as I was kind of starting on this Olympic journey. And for me, that was a huge one, because the overwhelming feeling of guilt when you are away all the time, or if you're trained, you know, you're not at home and you're not spending as much time as at home as maybe you would want to. And I think that is a big one, because you're kind of in a battle with yourself, because, you know, you're making somebody proud, and I'm making him proud by doing what I'm doing. But on the other hand,
it's time away.
Yeah, it's time away, and time you can never get back.
Yeah. So you've recently retired as an athlete after an amazing career. What are your current sort of goals around karate? Are you still involved? Do you still want to be involved? Do you still enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, I love karate, and I will always love karate. I mean, I think that it has so many fundamental things that are so important for just life. It gives you values and gives you skills that you just carry over into your life, and things that have really helped me in my professional career as well. I do love the sport. I follow the sport all the time. I mean, when there are competitions happening, even now I'm having a look, I'm watching it, because it's like watching football, you know. Some people love to watch football. I love to watch karate. I have needed a mental break from it. So I have kind of taken a year to step back, and then obviously I've had a lot of things personally going on within that time, but I think I've needed to do that to realize that it is something that I love, and it is something I do want to be a part of. So I have been doing some coaching on and off within this last year, but coaching is always something that I feel is a big responsibility. If I'm coaching, I want to give it my everything, and I want to be in a good place to do it. I don't want to do it for money, and I don't want to do it for the accolade and the look at me kind of status. I would want to do it because I want to bring the best out of people.
Yeah.
And bring them, whether that be a child or whether that be an elite performer. So I do take coaching very seriously, in terms of it's a big responsibility, and you can't go into that half-hearted.
Yeah. And do you have some desires to do that, or do you not have the time, do you think?
I do have desires to do that. This last year, like I've had a promotion at work, and there's been a lot of stuff that is really taking up a lot of my time, and it's just finding that balance now of realizing I'm not an athlete anymore. Changing that mindset took some time to do. I want to get back to training for me as well, and getting, but I feel like part of the training process is, again, realizing that I struggle to train and not have expectations of myself to be at a certain level. So part of the journey for me to come back training is to set realistic expectations of myself and not expect me to be at the top of my game. And I do struggle with that a little bit. So, yeah, and I've been toying with the idea of maybe doing a different sport, something like boxing or something that is completely different to karate, because what did you say, sorry? Yeah. Yeah, just something where you're a beginner. You know, there's no expectations. And more importantly, I don't have any expectations of myself. Mm.
Although you probably will, though.
You'll find
those karate traits creep back.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But I think, again, it brings back the fun, because I do want to keep learning. And I think that once you stop and once you close your mind off to that, then you will only ever be as good as you were yesterday, because you're never going to get better. So, yeah, I'm not sure is the answer to your question, really. Right. I do want to coach, but I just want to do it when I'm fully committed and ready.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thank you very much for your time, Carla. I've really enjoyed talking to you and hearing your journey. And congratulations on an amazing career. You'll be doing that as well. If you do take up jiu-jitsu, let me know.
Yeah, we'll do. Right. We'll do.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you.